Get a jump start on 2024 in a new Kia from Robert Brogdon's Olathe Kia. Shop their large selection, including the new Sorento, Niro, and Soul models. You'll score big with low prices, trade assist cash, and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Visit olathekia.com.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB, and of course wherever you get your podcasts as well. We appreciate you downloading, listening, subscribing, and checking us out. Nate Bucati joined as always by the one and only Carter Augustine. Carter, how are you, man?
Yeah, I mean, obviously a tough one over the weekend, but other than that, doing pretty well despite the heat here in Kansas City.
Yeah, so despite the heat and results, Carter's doing fine. At least we have our health right now. And let's check in with Allie Trost, who joins us as well. Allie, how are you?
Doing great. Carter, actually, on my way in today, I was Gary Lezak's given the weather report. I'm like, oh, good, I wore a sweatshirt this morning. Yeah. It's usually pretty chilly here, so.
It is cold inside this. Yeah, the Union Broadcasting offices where we are using as our base camp today for taping the show. So if that makes you feel any better, I usually bring a jacket because if it's 95 degrees outside, it's 67 degrees in here. So not that bad of a choice. But yeah, I'm ready for some fall-like weather. But we will lay out the menu for you really quick. Of course, we're going to take some time to look back at the painful 7-2 result that the LA Galaxy handed Sporting Kansas City late on Sunday night. We will look ahead to what is left of the season for SKC, including a home game on Saturday night against the Colorado Rapids. And we will preview what is a special night at Children's Mercy Park because it is Kick Childhood Cancer Night. We will talk with Ashley Green, who is in charge of community engagement for Sporting Kansas City, including overseeing the Victory Project, which if you're a Sporting Kansas City fan, of course, you already know that the Victory Project deals with pediatric cancer-related causes. So it's a very, very special day coming up on Saturday against the Colorado Rapids. We'll get to that here in a little bit. But for now, guys, let's open it up. LA Galaxy 7, Sporting Kansas City 2. I'm going to give you guys a couple of notes that were tweeted out by our friend Paul Carr, the winner of the SKC Trivia Night, by the way, as well, which maybe a bit of an unfair advantage for Paul Carr since he is one of the preeminent statisticians in American sports. But he tweeted out, Sporting Kansas City is the first team to both score and concede 7 goals in a game in the same MLS season. And he finished with a yay question mark. And then he also pointed out, this is, I think, really interesting, guys. Maybe we could talk about the overarching storyline behind this. A team has scored 7 goals in an MLS game 3 times this season out of 363 games. Prior to 2019, a team has scored 7 goals in an MLS game 5 times out of 5,468 games. So over 5,000 more games played in the history of the league. It's happened 5 times. In just 363 games this year, it's happened 3 times. And by the way, Sporting Kansas City were involved in 2 of those 3 occasions. I think this is just another one of those metrics, guys, to point out that goal scoring is up across soccer, in MLS anyway. And look, these are obviously outliers when you score 7 goals in a game. But maybe I'll just ask you guys if we can dive into that a little bit as we continue to monitor this ever-changing landscape of MLS. The money that's come in with TAM has been largely spent on midfielders and attacking players, mm-hmm. and maybe not as much on defense. Is it as simple as that, Carter, as you look at it?
Possibly for the overall goal scoring. I'm with you that the 7 goal stat is just kind of a funny one. It's a bit of an outlier. I wouldn't expect there to be 3 7 goal games in a season again, but maybe there will be. But yeah, it does seem like a lot more of the money has been spent on attackers and especially foreign attackers as well. And it was, I think Wayne Rooney came out this week and said he thinks that American players should be paid more than they are in MLS. So that's something to keep an eye out on in the CBA coming up.
Yeah, well, and especially when you look at the problems that MLS teams get into when it comes to keeping American players and giving them more money to help them advance teams, keep that consistency. I mean, look at the Ico Parra situation last season with Sporting Kansas City. They got kind of caught in a bind. But then again, like you're saying, the players that are coming in, I believe 2 of those 7 goal games, the one Sporting Kansas City had against Montreal Impact, I believe Johnny Russell had a hat trick in that game. He's a player who, you know, not an American-born player. Zlatan Ibrahimovic, a hat trick in the most recent 7-goal game. So the goals are coming from some of these players that are coming in, you know, from out of the country. So
I think that's a really good point, Allie, that we can maybe explore a little bit, because with the changing collective bargaining agreement, we don't know where things will head next. And Carter, what you brought up about what Wayne Rooney said, I think that teams should be more encouraged to keep the players that they have. It should be less punitive to give a big pay raise to a player that you have on your team than it is right now in the league. In other words, right now there's almost an incentive to go out with Tam and spend money on a foreign-born player. You can spend 3 times as much money on that player sometimes and have it take less of a hit against what your salary mechanisms are than if you just give a 50% pay raise to a guy that's already on your team.
Yeah.
And that's obviously that speaks right to the situation we're talking about with Ike Opara. And look at what Aaron Long's been dealing with when it comes to New York Red Bulls as well. I think for this league, the there are always unintended consequences whenever you change something in life, right? Mm-hmm. And so the intention behind target allocation money, I think, has accomplished a lot of goals.
Yeah.
It's brought in more quality players to this league. It's elevated the quality of this league massively. But one of the unintended consequences is that it's been harder to keep your own players. I think that hopefully, Carter, maybe they can find a way to address that a little bit, to reward teams for having their players. I think for a fan base standpoint, you start to grow to appreciate a player. He becomes a really good player. You want to see your team have a better opportunity to keep mm-hmm. that player. That's what we see with things like the franchise tag and the National Football League.
Right.
You get a star player, we're going to, and in the NBA as well, you know, we're going to see what we can do to try to keep that guy around.
Yeah, definitely. I'm with you. Hopefully they can find some ways to maybe keep some of that talent. I think what you mentioned on it being a lesser cap hit using the TAM, I think that's the biggest part of this, and that's the incentive for teams to go outside and bring some of the guys in. And like you said, it's had some wonderful effects, including some of these young South American players that we're getting that maybe we wouldn't have gotten in the past. And maybe to the first point, it has made a bit of an imbalance in terms of the money always being with the attackers. But also in world soccer, you look at the forwards make a lot more usually. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a couple exceptions, but it's pretty interesting to me, at least, that the highest scoring American is Chris Wondolowski in the league this year, which at his age, you maybe wouldn't have expected that to be the case coming into this season.
Yeah. And you know, again, like you're saying, Nate, making that shift, then it also incentivizes the top talent in America to stick around. I mean, look at some of these up-and-coming players and the potential that we have in the U.S. already with some of these young players that we're not only seeing on the national team, but I mean, if we're looking at Sporting Kansas City specifically, Gianluca Busio, he's a player who has potential to, you know, at some point leave America and go play elsewhere if he decides to, you know, embrace that opportunity and go with it. But the incentive for him to do that versus stay is pretty much there.
You know, for me, though, it's not even so much the players, like if we want to talk about Christian Pulisic or Josh Sargent, you know, one of those types of guys. I think that those players, for quite some time, are going to want to go to Europe if they have the opportunity to go to a league that allows them the possibility of playing in Champions League. And I don't know that necessarily MLS is in a position yet to convince that player not to do it. I mean, every once in a while with a Jordan Morris-type player, it might happen, but I don't really begrudge those players, but it's maybe that next tier of players, where players that are already established in their career that maybe are not looking for the growth potential. They're looking for the best situation right now, or the players that are maybe just a slight tier below that, you know, that have a chance to maybe they should be having to turn down more money here to go over there in some ways, I guess, is the way that I look at that.
I would agree with that. And then also, you know, speaking also to that imbalance of mostly strikers coming in. I mean, just to name a few, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, Wayne Rooney, Pavon, and then you've got Brian Fernandez, just Josef Martinez. You know, those are 5 players right there, all really, really productive, offensive, you know, lethal pieces. And then they're going up against players like Graham Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, there's a defensive imbalance. And, you know, like you noted, Carter, attackers usually do make more money than a good defender does, but again, does that imbalance create some problems for MLS going forward?
So you brought up something, Carter, that I think is really interesting because I hadn't thought about this. So when you were talking about Chris Wondolowski, you weren't just talking about career numbers. You're talking about this year.
This year, yeah. High-scoring American this season.
Yeah, so he's on 14 goals. And, I mean, you look at the players ahead of him. Vela, Ibrahimovic, Joseph Martinez, Diego Rossi, Eber, Eber. I think that's how you say his name. We did his game at NYCFC not too long ago, I should remember. Przybylko, who's been an interesting story for Philadelphia, and then Wondolowski after that. I'm looking to see who the next, then the next American would be Jossie Zardes on 12 goals, CJ Sapong's on 12. That is something that this league needs to continue to develop more good American goal scorers. And just in general, that's one thing that the United States needs more of in the pool, right, is proven goal scorers.
Yeah, but it's a tough balance for teams, right, because if I'm an MLS front office, I don't necessarily care if it's an American.
Right.
I'm going to spend some money maybe on an attacker that's going to get me goals and it's going to put butts in seats and try and move my team up the table. So it's always really interesting to watch how those teams kind of balance maybe – what some American fans would want, and that is developing young American talent and, you know, also trying to win games at the same time. It's going to be fascinating, and all of this stuff is going to come up in the CBA as well. I think this offseason is going to be really, really fascinating.
And then the star power as well with Zlatan Ibrahimovic. I mean, I wonder how many seats or jerseys have been sold just for that last name being on the field or being an option for a game alone. That's definitely an element that you see a lot in the NBA, specifically with teams having these really just high-caliber teams with just star after star after star sitting all the way down the bench. And, you know, MLS definitely has some of that with the players they've brought in.
Yeah, and we can always use more of that and getting those type of guys in and the big superstars. And you look at the Galaxy on the road, they get huge draws pretty much everywhere because they have Zlatan with them. So always going to welcome those guys in with open arms.
Okay, so the game itself, Sporting fall 7-2, and Carter, you and I were calling this game for radio. It was 1-0, and Sporting KC were creating good chances, and this looked like this was going to be an even back and forth game. And then all of a sudden, it just all went wrong to start the second half. And once it started going wrong, it seemed like Sporting just couldn't turn off the spigot at all. I mean, the floodgates just were open at that time. Peter Vermees said after the game, "Look, they finished their chances. We didn't finish ours." When you lose 7-2, it's hard to say it was just about finishing chances because if somebody finishes 7 goals in a game, but boy, Sporting did have their chances in the second half, didn't they? I mean, you and I were talking about through the course of the game. You just wonder if they are able to keep it close. Do the floodgates not come open as much, and are they able to stay into the game? I guess that's the only way you can look at it.
Yeah. It's so frustrating for Sporting that the first half they played so well and then maybe were a bit unhappy with how the penalty was conceded, a bit unlucky with Melia saving the penalty. First keeper to do that to Zlatan in MLS. He was 10 for 10 before that penalty, and the rebound bounces right back to him, and all of a sudden you've got a tie game maybe a little bit out of nowhere. But like you said, I mean, you concede 7 goals. I think it's a little bit more than the chances thing. It's, you know, you might have some questions about that second half performance, especially conceding 6. And yeah, they did have chances, especially when they were down 3-1. I thought there were a lot of chances for Sporting at that point in the game, and they can grab one, maybe they can get back into it. But that whole game was pretty wide open and felt like the LA Galaxy midfield was having pretty much their way the entire game.
Yeah, and you know, like you said, it's one thing to have opportunities. It's another thing to have the opportunity to close the game, make it a 1-goal game. I think at that point, when it was 3-1, Jerso Fernandez sends one flying over the top. You make that a 3-2 game, and that totally shifts the mentality, the momentum. And then, you know, after that, the Galaxy just gets up by, I want to say it was 2 or 3 more before Felipe was able to pull one back. But, you know, it is beyond just missing opportunities or not closing in on chances. And I feel like that's kind of been the answer for the last couple of months. It's like, oh, just we're not finishing our chances. But at some point, it's more than just not finishing chances. It's, you know, it's when you don't finish those chances, how do you respond and keep the other team from capitalizing on theirs? Because that alone is a chance defensively on Sporting's end as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of things conspired against Sporting Kansas City in this situation. Number one, obviously, you're going up against a world-class goal scorer, one of the best in the history of the world when it comes to that, who's just a machine. Number two, we talked, as Carter mentioned, a wide-open game that was up and down. Sporting in a situation where they feel like they need to go for all 3 points. Yep. They're pressing numbers forward. As the game starts to get more and more stretched, that creates more space for a guy like Zlatan and for Pavone Antuna to be able to run at guys. And I just still wonder, and I don't know, maybe someday, you know, when we do the postmortem on this season for Sporting Kansas City, we'll hear guys talk about it a little bit. I just wonder if there's an element of mental and physical exhaustion for this team. They've shown the last couple of games, they go into these games up for a fight. They go in these games ready to try to win the game. They've been able to take 1-0 leads in Portland and in L.A., but when things go bad, it just seems like there's this, you know, this kind of letdown of, oh, man, you know. And if you have that at the MLS level, teams are going to punish you. And look, people can look at these excuses or whatever. I'm just laying out what I've seen through the course of the year. You start the season in practice 2 weeks earlier than normal after playing deep into the season last year. So the guys really, you know, you don't really have that off season. It's not the normal preseason because you're accelerating everything in preseason to be ready to go versus Toluca right off the bat. And you make that run all the way to the semifinals of the Champions League. And then you get beat the way they did. I think there's a mental shot to the head in that regard. And a bunch of guys get hurt after that. So you're constantly playing catch up and trying to outfight all these injuries and all these things the rest of the season. And I just wonder, we've gotten to a point where these guys are just mentally wiped out. And I maybe people will look at me and say that, oh, that's an excuse or whatever. But I just, that's kind of what I saw toward the end of that game. It's like, man, we came out here, we went toe-to-toe with L.A. for the first 45 minutes, and then we catch a horrible break, and it's 1-0, or it's 1-1 like that. And then when that, you know, I thought it was a terrible break on the second goal, personally. I thought that, I absolutely agree with Peter Vermees that, I don't know if it was because it was Zlatan or not, that was a blatant foul to me. They just sent Graham Smith flying. And so now you're down 2-1, and you feel like you've caught a couple of bad breaks. And I think a typical Sporting Kansas City team, you know, bows their neck a little bit and keeps going. But I just wonder if it's just been too much this year.
Yeah, and I think especially last season, we did see that quite often.
Yeah.
You know, if they were down 3-1, they weren't out of the game until the extra time, you know, that whistle blew. Whereas this season, it does feel like, you know, they do go down by a goal or two goals, and it's like, oh, there's the game. And again, like you're saying, Nate, I don't know if it is just a point of total mental exhaustion, because Peter's talked about this quite a bit. When you approach the beginning of your season with that championship mindset of you're at that peak level that you spend all season typically building up towards, that's a lot of mental come down and highs and lows that you're having to adjust and deal with, and then you throw the injuries on top, and it's just a lot.
Yeah. It's something that, you know, maybe it will go down as an excuse for this season, like you were saying, but it is something to talk about. It has had an effect on these guys, and I think it's a problem in world soccer in general that you look at. Since they've started at the beginning of the 2018 season, they've been playing pretty much nonstop for, it'll be almost two straight years, and they've got a couple, you know, 3 week break in there in December, pretty much, you know, maybe 4 weeks. And outside of that, they've been going nonstop. Some guys have to go play for their country at times. There's just a lot of soccer, and it seems to be pretty much year round. And I think coming into the season, we all expected it to have an effect on this team. And we saw that with the injuries, I think definitely was inevitable with how little rest they've gotten over these past 2 years. But maybe that's an excuse. This game especially, I have to think that outwardly they are saying, you know, they had the shots. They had 20 shots in this game. They had the chances. But I got to think inwardly that, given up 6 goals in the second half, they've, and a lot of them were crosses that were not at all defended. I mean, you've got unmarked guys in the box as well. I think that's just something that we haven't seen, and maybe the fatigue mentally or physically has something to do with that, but they can't be happy with that.
I don't know if you guys noticed, but in reading body language and trying to infer what it means sometimes can be a dangerous thing, but when Felipe scored the first goal, he looked exhausted at that point in time. Like he looked like he needed to be picked up off the floor, and he kind of did the heart-shaped hands thing that he does. But there wasn't like this, we just took the lead against the LA Galaxy, here we go. It was kind of like, oh, man, you know, we got a goal. And I just kind of feel like that's the way it's been a little bit for Sporting KC down the stretch this season. But that one's in the past now. Sporting KC still mathematically are alive for the playoffs. We don't need to get into how realistic that is or anything like that, but they still have four games left to play, and we will get into that here in a little bit. But first, we're going to take a break and come back with Ashley Green, who heads up community outreach for Sporting Kansas City and is going to be involved in our Kick Childhood Cancer Day on Saturday as well. That's right after this on the Sporting Kansas City Show.
Sports Radio 810 WHB, Kansas City's exclusive home for Sporting Kansas City.
The Sporting Kansas City Show continues on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB, as we also invite you to listen to the podcast and subscribe and rate the podcast if you get the opportunity, whether that's at the 810 WHB app or on iTunes, Google, Spotify, Asking Alexa, however you get your podcast. We appreciate you listening. And we are happy to have a special guest on the show now. We've tried to make this happen a couple of times, but her schedule's been very busy. She's been elusive. But as you know, through the course of the season, we've been kind of giving people peeks behind the curtain to different aspects of the organization. And this is one that I would say is incredibly near and dear to the hearts of all of us who are involved with Sporting Kansas City. Her name is Ashley Green. I checked with her beforehand on the job title, and I'm still afraid that I'm going to screw it up a little bit. So, Ashley, first of all, hello, how are you? And why don't you give us exactly what your job title is with Sporting Kansas City?
Hi, thank you for having me, first off. My official title is Director of Community Programs. What that entails is overseeing the Victory Project, which is our foundation, which we'll get into, but then overseeing our community relations efforts with Sporting Kansas City.
All right, so well done there. And I like to call her Smashley, but she goes by Ashley officially. Are you good with Smashley during the course of this segment today?
100%. Thank you for asking.
Okay, good. Some people don't. Some people eschew the nicknames around here, so I try to be respectful of all requests. First of all, I know this wasn't your first job within Sporting Kansas City. How long have you been with the club, and how did you come to be involved with Sporting Kansas City originally?
So I have been with the organization for just over 9 years, which is a legend at this point, or so I tell myself. I started off with the club in ticket sales. I was selling season tickets, cold calling, doing all that fun stuff, was in client services, or membership services, and then was in sponsorship for the last 6 years. So it's been a great opportunity to kind of roll over into the Victory Project and community relations side of things, and really enjoying it. But it's been a great organization and really, really thankful to be here. It's my first job out of college, and really lucky to have this ride so far.
I think Ashley's been unlucky to have to work with me for a long time in that respect. But really glad to have you on.
Thanks.
Certainly one of the, I think, most well-liked people in the organization, and for almost a decade now as well. You've been here for a long time. I'm just kind of curious, maybe what are some of your favorite moments behind the scenes at SKC that you can share with us on air?
Absolutely. There's a lot of moments. I mean, I think you can talk about the championships that we've won, the games that we've won. One of the probably the biggest moment for me is opening the building, June 9th, 2011. I was in membership services at the time. Truthfully, got emotional. We didn't win that game. It was a 0-0 draw against, Chicago Fire. Everybody remembers it, remembers maybe the cow too. But, it was absolutely incredible to come into a city like Kansas City and not know anything about it. And then to open a building and have over 20,000 people believe in you and believe in the club and believe in the city to have a soccer-specific stadium, have Sporting Kansas City on the field. And it was really cool to be a part of that. And I would say that's probably the best thing I can remember. I mean, yeah, you can talk about wins and losses. You can talk about draws. But to have a you know, and our, I think our players talk about it a lot too. Our fans are the lifeblood of this organization, and if they're not there, it's an empty, you know, empty stadium. But it was one memorable moment, and think about it often.
So where are you from originally? You talk about coming to Kansas City, and did you have a background in soccer growing up? Did you just want to get into sports? What brought you to Sporting Kansas City in the first place?
So I'm from a small town in Illinois, Charleston, Illinois, home of Eastern Illinois University. You can throw out a ton of NFL football all-stars, Tony Romo, Sean Payton, Mike Shanahan, the list goes on, Jimmy Garoppolo. But I was a track athlete, never played soccer unless you count as a five-year-old, kind of moseying around a field, everybody chasing the ball at the same time. But I knew I wanted to get into sports. I totally enjoyed being an athlete, but really enjoyed learning and experiencing the business side of things. So coming out of school, I knew I wanted to get into sports and didn't know kind of what avenue or path that was going to take me, but ended up getting a job here kind of, I would say, at the bottom of the totem pole and working my way up, which has been absolutely incredible.
Yeah, having worked your way up, is there any maybe advice you would give to, we're models for young people coming up, but is there any advice someone looking to get into sports since you've, like you said, started at the bottom of the totem pole and have had a variety of jobs?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say be willing to do anything and everything. I will tell you, and this is no surprise to Jake Reed or Greg Allen, I did not like every day cold calling and, you know, selling season tickets or group tickets. But I will say it was the best foundation I could have built for myself going into the multiple jobs that I've had with Sporting and wherever life takes me at, you know, after. But it just built a great foundation for what I do on a daily basis. It's, you know, you can talk about conversations. We all have relationships and conversate with people every single day. And I think that really helped me, you know, build that foundation. But yeah, willing to do anything, work hard, don't complain. and I think you'll see the fruits of your labor for sure.
Okay, so now that you've come into the community outreach part of the job and particularly the Victory Project, we're going to start to get into that now. I'm just curious what your reaction has been to this aspect of the job and maybe anything that surprised you about it or maybe been most rewarding or just in general what your impressions have been since moving over to that side of the organization.
Yeah, I think all organizations, whether you're in sports or not, you want to be out in the community. You want to be doing good, giving back, all of that. I think what surprised me most is how much we really do, and we probably don't pat ourselves on the back enough about. We're in the community constantly, whether that's, focus on our military or pets or our first responders in our community. We donate gear back to underserved communities. We provide free clinics across the community. And that's just kind of one side of things. On top of that, the Victory Project is near and dear to my heart. I've been volunteering with the foundation for, you know, since its inception in 2013. And, you know, just seeing really how much the Victory Project is involved through Children's Mercy and other organizations within the Kansas City community, I think it's just absolutely incredible and want to continue to do more, as we continue to raise more money and, you know, get more involved, I think the opportunities will come to us.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious about that. Since it started in 2013, I think everyone in the organization has been able to see how big Victory Project and how much it means to this organization. I think the kids getting recognized every game is one of the coolest things that this team does, and the fans being a big part of that as well. How have you kind of, from first being in the organization and seeing it and now being, you know, at the spearhead of it, how have you seen the Victory Project kind of grow since 2013?
Absolutely. It's a great question. So, I mean, I think, you know, from where it started in 2013, I think it was a need that we felt like we needed to do, you know, with, 2013 Victory Project starting and getting involved and seeing the need from a pediatric cancer standpoint and that the families need help. more than that, we get to bring the fun. We get to bring the memories and the experience. And so I think from that standpoint, from 2013 until now, we just continue to capitalize on the awesome experience that Sporting Kansas City can provide and provide those memories. I mean, outside of the game, I didn't get to see it day in, day out. Now I get to see it every single game. And for getting families in there that have never been to a Sporting Kansas City game that are now telling us that they wake up at 6 a.m. to watch EPL, or they're up late at night at 9 o'clock watching our games on our broadcast because they are now through and through Sporting Kansas City / soccer fans, I think it's absolutely incredible. Then you talk about just the positive experience that we provide them, the photos that will last a lifetime. You can't replace those, right? Even with Sporting Wishes, when we started that a couple years ago, never thought in a million years we'd be able to grant as many second wishes as we've had. We're going to top 20 this year, which is absolutely incredible and really excited. And again, only hope that grows going into 2020.
The numbers are phenomenal, and there's something we certainly should be incredibly proud of. But I do think that numbers are numbers. Relationships and the personal stories and experiences that you see are what really grab people. And the thing I've noticed about your job, and I can't stress this enough to the people that are listening to this right now, to our fans that see the honorees up in the suite, is you get into personal relationships with these families. Some of our players get into personal relationships with these families. I can sit here and tell you that my family, my wife and I, have become friends that correspond regularly with some of the families that we've dealt with over time. But you're involved with every single one of them. Mm-hmm. Does that get hard at any point in terms of just like, look, this is heavy stuff. Like I have kids myself, and like my worst nightmare in the world is what these parents are living. Mm-hmm. I mean, that idea that something could happen to one of your own children and you're dealing with these families on a consistent basis. Is that hard for you, or is it inspiring for you to get to be around these families and draw strength actually from them?
No, that question comes up a lot. And I'd like to say that, yeah, it's tough. And it is tough at times. And I will admit that. I would say if I didn't get emotional, I'd be cold hearted. Mm-hmm. And that's not the case. But what I would say is that looking at each individual family, looking at each individual kid, their siblings, mom, dad, grandma, grandpa, cancer does not discriminate. And honestly, it inspires me to be their support. If I could cure cancer yesterday, I think any of us would in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. But we aren't there yet. And so, again, going back to that experience and making sure that we're the light that they see, we're the support that they need, I think is all we can do and all we should be doing for them. Because at the end of the day, we had an awesome experience at Whiteman Air Force Base a couple months ago with the 303rd Squadron. And one of the moms didn't have to say anything, but what she said was so impactful and powerful that she was just so gracious and thankful that they got to do something as a family that did not involve a doctor visit, a hospital visit, something about needles, blood drawn, X, Y, and Z. It was just important for them to have that moment. And that, motivates me to continue to do the events that we're doing, continuing to provide those awesome experiences and memories. Because again, those can't ever be taken away.
Powerful stuff.
Yeah, that's awesome. With this role, you get to work with the players a lot too, and their involvement in the community. What's that been like for you?
No, it's been great. I think we talk about this often. Our team is fantastic. We're out in the community a ton. We do, again, clinics and appearances, whether that's sponsorship related or through youth soccer. I mean, we are all about it. I think our players absolutely love being in the community. They're idols for little boys and little girls. I mean, anybody wants to be a professional athlete, right? I think we all probably did at some point when we were younger. Maybe we still do. But, it's one of those things where they like to be on the community too. I think, we've got some all-stars that go to Children's Mercy with us once a month, which is absolutely fantastic. But that goes without saying that our entire team is really important to the success that we have in the community, and really can't thank them enough and their involvement and want to be there.
Okay, once again, we're visiting with Ashley Green. Let's talk about a couple of the big events that have already happened this year and then what's coming up here as we come down the stretch at the end of the 2019 season. The gala was incredible this year. I think it was the biggest one. It just continues to grow. Tell us a little bit about that and what we were able to raise and what made this year's event special.
Yeah, so each year we have an annual kind of dinner and auction, our Victory Gala, and then we kind of close off that kind of event with this Sporting Invitational. So had that at Loch Lloyd this year. Victory Gala was at the Muehlbach downtown and could not thank everyone who had participated, yourself included, Nate, on such a successful year. Between the two events, we were able to raise over $590,000 for the Victory Project. So that money stays here local and goes back to our community and our kids fighting cancer. And it's absolutely incredible to even say that. It's our biggest year yet, and really excited to see and continue that, you know, going into 2020. How do we top how well we did this year? So, yeah, really awesome.
Yeah, the gala was a big time event. I mean, that was as big league as an event like that that I've been a part of. So it was really cool. It was great to see how much money we were able to raise there. And now coming up this weekend on Saturday, Sporting Kansas City's home game. So the month of September is Childhood Cancer Awareness Month, and across the league, MLS gets involved in this. If you are a soccer fan and you've been watching any games, you've seen the yellow soccer balls and the yellow goals. That's the color for childhood cancer. But this game for us in particular is going to be our Kick Childhood Cancer game. So for our fans that are going to be either in the stadium or watching on TV, maybe give us a few highlights as to what we can expect on Saturday in that regard.
You bet. So you will see our players in the kind of a gold training top to identify or signify the Childhood Cancer Awareness Month. Those will be for sale through Sporting Style, along with a custom Kick Childhood Cancer scarf. And I will tell you, that scarf, shout out to Maddie Yost, absolutely amazing design. I'm super excited to have that hanging on my wall. But we will also be inviting out all of our families and kiddos since 2013. So we're actually really excited to have over 50 of our families in the stadium on Saturday night. So we'll be hosting a fun tailgate for their families. And then we're actually going to do a pregame kind of recognition or ceremony to highlight and celebrate them, both the kiddos and their families, on everything that they've gone through. And then hopefully a 90 minutes to victory thereafter.
Yeah, it's so cool. It's really exciting. It's like we said, around the league as well. If you got social media, hashtag Kick Childhood Cancer, and the league donates to the Children's Oncology Group, which is really a cool initiative as well. Part of what Nate and I will be taking part on Saturday also, we're having a little broadcast auction. We did it for the first time last year. I thought it went pretty well, and maybe can you give a few spoilers or tease what's coming up for that on Saturday?
I can highlight a couple. So again, really looking forward to the broadcast auction again this year. We've got some really exclusive opportunities and experiences. We've got kind of an all-star Graham Zusi experience package that we're going to be highlighting. We've got our friend Patrick Mahomes supporting the initiative. Got a signed Sporting KC jersey from him, which we're really excited about. We've got quite a few jerseys that will be signed by our team that we'll be giving away, and then a few other things I'll keep secret for now.
Some great stuff there, and you can tune into the game on Saturday night. We'll be giving you the details on the auction. If you come to the game as well, you'll see videos and presentations during the course of the game that tell you about that. That auction goes all the way up till what date again?
October 1st.
October 1st. So you'll have a little bit of time to get on those things, but that money goes back to the Victory Project to help kids right here in Kansas City that are dealing with cancer and their families as well. We can't stress that enough. Ashley, thank you so much for the time. It's been great, you know, having our audience get to know you a little bit. And keep up the great work. We all are a big fan of what you're doing, and everybody that works with you at the Victory Project as well.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, that is Smashley, Ashley Green. We will take a break. We'll come back with Allie Trost. She'll rejoin us, and we'll talk a little more Sporting KC soccer. We'll look forward to the match for Sporting KC against the Colorado Rapids as well right after this.
Sports Radio 810 WHB, Kansas City's exclusive home for Sporting Kansas City.
Back to wrap things up on another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Napier Katie rejoined by Carter Augustine and Allie Trostar. Thanks to Ashley Green for joining us on the show. Now, guys, let's look ahead to one of the last two home games of 2019 for Sporting Kansas City as they take on the Colorado Rapids and some familiar faces, Diego Rubio, Kai Kamara, players like that coming back to town. It is the Kick Childhood Cancer game, as I've said as well. And Carter, when you look at it, you got ninth place versus 10th place in the Western Conference in this game. Although, ever since making their managerial change, the Rapids have actually been playing at a much, much better clip. I think this is a better Rapids team now coming in than what we saw earlier in the season.
Yeah, I think so. And since both changes, right? I mean, once they got rid of Hudson, they saw an immediate uptick with Connor Casey. And then Robin Fraser's come in. They won their first three games with him. And then they just lost this past weekend but to Toronto, but they looked better in that game as well. They went down 2-0, came back and tied it 2-2 until conceding the game-winning goal for Toronto. So it's going to be interesting because I think we've talked about it on here with coaching changes in the past. Maybe Colorado have thought that they've been out of the playoffs for some time, but they're making a little bit of a push here, and maybe it's because players know that they are trying to impress this new coach and try and remain with this team for the next season. So I'm fascinated to see how they play because you're right, it seems like they're a much different, much better team than early on in the season when Sporting went out to Colorado.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. I mean, the momentum boost that adds not only to want to finish the season strong now that they've got this refresh and it just lifts this new spirit within the team, but then also looking ahead to the future, what their role might look like with that team. And then, I mean, when you talk about the two players coming back to Kansas City, it's not just any two players. Two players who have quite a bit of fire, you know, more fiery players that, you know, used to be with Sporting Kansas City in Kai Kamara and Diego Rubio. Those two are going to want to come out and not only, you know, get a win, but score some goals as well.
So on the flip side, I'm going to be really fascinated to see what Peter Vermees decides to do with his lineup for this game.
Yeah.
For one thing, coming off a 7-2 result, usually that's the type of game that institutes a lot of changes in a lineup. Second of all, you know, Sam McDowell, back when he was on the beat for the Kansas City Star, did an article with Peter a few weeks ago asking about, look, if this season doesn't start to turn around, will you shift the focus at some point from trying to make the playoffs to building for the future and playing young guys and getting a look at players, deciding how you want to construct your roster? This team, as I said, mathematically is still in the playoff picture. They've got 6 points separating themselves from the Portland Timbers in seventh place with 4 games remaining. Now, we all know this was already a long shot, so it's considered the longest of long shots now. But Peter Vermees' answer back then, anyways, was, I've never been in this position before. All we've ever known how to do here is go for every game and try to win every game that we play, whether that's U.S. Open Cup, whether that's Champions League, whether that's MLS play. So he didn't really, you know, I don't think he was even really willing to consider that question back at that time. I just am going to be interested to see, is he still in that mindset? Maybe he is. Maybe he will be the rest of the season. Will we see a lot of changes? Will they be because of the result from last weekend? Will they be because of an eye toward the future or a little bit of both? I think it's going to be fascinating to see where he goes from here.
Great questions. And I think at least for this weekend, I mean, like you said, they're still mathematically in it. If they win all 4 of their games here, they get 12 points, and you never know. We've seen other teams drop points over these last couple of weeks that are in the playoff hunt. So I think at least for this weekend, they're going to still very much go for it. So then if there are changes in the lineup, I think they'll be reflective of that 7-2 and not necessarily with an eye on the future because, like you said, he's always said that they go for every game, and I think that when they're still in it, they're going to try and get all 3 points and stay in the race as long as possible.
Yeah, but if there is one position that I do think we will see a change, and I was actually kind of surprised just because of how adamant Peter is on not wanting to burn out young guys and put them in too many difficult situations back to back to back. He's emphasized that with Gianluca Busio. I would be shocked if Graham Smith gets the start, and not necessarily because of the breakdown that happened and, you know, whatever was his fault wasn't his fault, but with a healthy Baton Barath available, I would be really surprised not to see him maybe step up.
It'll be interesting to see. I mean, you know, Graham Smith was in there for the 3-game winning streak that kind of gave late life to this playoff push. I don't know. Look, he's been stuck in a couple of bad spots here in the last couple of games. You know, he got dragged out to have to defend Diego Valeri one-on-one, as you said, for a young second-year player who's not on big wages to go up against a designated player who's one of the best players in the league. Like, that's tough. Then he found himself isolated a lot in this game against the LA Galaxy in situations that would have been just as tough for Botan Berat as they were for Graham Smith. So I don't know. It is interesting. What is the future of that other spot next to Matt Beisler going forward? I mean, I think that is going to be one of the biggest questions that has to be answered going into the offseason.
Yeah, definitely. And like you said, he's on low wages, Graham Smith, and he's been keeping Botan Berat and Andreu Fontas out of the side over the past month and a half. And yeah, it wasn't his best game for Sporting Kansas City, but I agree. There's crosses coming in that are areas where you feel like maybe they could have done better to stop the service, and he's on the back end of that. It was the 7 goals weren't all on Graham Smith by any means, but really curious where that's going to go for the future. And I'm with you though, Ali, for this game, that might be one of the spots where maybe we do see some rotation. It's going to be really interesting to see how they rotate or if they make changes following this game.
Yeah.
Okay, so we will wrap things up here. That game is coming up on Saturday night, Sporting KC against the Colorado Rapids, 7:30. You can watch it on Fox Sports Kansas City. You can listen to it right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. And again, don't forget, that is also the Kick Childhood Cancer Game for us. We're going to have all kinds of great auction items and ways to raise money for the Victory Project to help kids battling cancer. So for Ali Trost and for Carter Augustine, this is Nate Bucati saying we will see you next week on the Sporting Kansas City Show.